Inside COVID-19 from BizNews. Professor Michael Levitt, a product of Pretoria Boys High, whose family left for England when he was 15 years old, is a recipient of science's greatest honour, the Nobel Prize in his case, for chemistry. As you'll hear in the highlights of this interview with Freddie Sayers of Unheard.com, the 72-year-old professor of computer science and structural biology at California's top university, Stanford, still has his South African accent. The globally respected scientist who's been tracking COVID-19 data since January has a critical message for the land of his birth. The lockdown is a huge mistake, he says, and those countries which have been applying them will be harshly judged by future generations.
Big test is going to be Sweden. Sweden is practicing a level of social distancing that is keeping children in schools, keeping people at work. They are obviously having more deaths than countries like Israel or Austria that are practicing very, very strict social distancing. But I think it is not a crazy policy. The reason I felt that social distancing was unimportant is that I had the two examples in China to start with. And then we had the additional examples. The first one was South Korea, Iran, and Italy. The beginning of all the epidemics showed us slowing down, and it was very hard for me to believe that those three countries could practice social distancing as well as China. China was amazing, especially outside Hubei, in that they had no additional outbreaks. People left Hubei, were very carefully tracked, had to wear face masks all the time, had to take their temperatures all the time, and there was no further outbreaks. So this did not happen either in South Korea or in Italy or in Iran. Now, 2 months later, something else suggests that social distancing might not be important, and that is that the total number of deaths we're seeing in New York City, in parts of England, in parts of France, in northern Italy, all seem to stop at about the same fraction of the population. So are they all practicing equally good social distancing? I don't think so. The problem, I think, is outbreaks occurring in different regions. So I think social distancing that stops people moving from London to Manchester is probably a really good idea. My feeling is that in London and in New York City, all the people who got infected all got infected before anybody noticed. There's no way that the infection grew so quickly in New York City without the infection spreading very quickly. So one of the key things is to stop people know that they're sick, infecting others. And here again, China has three very, very important advantages that are not high tech, that don't involve security tracking of telephones. What they involve is, number one, the tradition in China for years of wearing a face mask when you're sick. As soon as the coronavirus started, everybody wore a face mask. It doesn't have to be a hygienic face mask. It just has to be face covering that stops you spraying saliva, micro droplets of saliva on somebody you talk to. The second thing in China is that because of the SARS epidemic, they were so scared of it. In most airports, stations where you pay tolls, etc., there are thermometers, infrared thermometers that measure your temperature. So having your temperature measured at every single store entrance, either with a handheld thermometer or with something mounted on the wall, is something completely standard in China. And the third thing is that almost all payments in China are made not using a credit card. So in some senses, it is very, very much easier there to practice the social distancing. Of course, in addition, they know where people are.
What's your view of the lockdown policy that so many European countries and states in America have introduced?
I think it is a huge mistake. I think we need smart lockdown. If we were to do this again, we would probably insist on face masks hand sanitizers and some kind of payment that did not involve touching right from the very beginning. This would slow down new outbreaks. For example, they found, as I understand, that children, even if they're infected, never infect adults. So why do we not have children at school? Why do we not have people working? England is reaching England, France, Italy, Sweden, Belgium, Holland are all reaching levels of saturation that are going to be very, very close to herd immunity. So basically, and I think that's a good thing. I think the policy of herd immunity is the right policy. I think Britain was on exactly the right track before they were fed wrong numbers, and they made a huge mistake. I see the standout winners as Germany and Sweden. They didn't practice too much lockdown. They got enough people sick to get some herd immunity. The standout losers are countries like Austria, Australia, Israel, that actually had very, very strict lockdown, but didn't have many cases. So they have damaged their economies, caused massive social damage, damaged the educational year of their children, but not obtained any herd immunity. I think in many ways, the European countries are fine. They didn't need to have lockdown, but they will have all reached a high enough level of infection not to have to worry about further future attacks of coronavirus. The United States seems to be heading that way. They're certainly that way in New York City, but they still have a long way to go.
What you're saying is that you believe success, as we are currently measuring it, which is as few cases as possible and as small a spread of the virus as possible, is actually failure.
I think if you really control your epidemic, for example, California has now had lockdown for 6 weeks and wants another 4 weeks. They have so far less than 100 deaths. That means they don't have more, let's say, 100,000 people. That is not enough to give them significant herd immunity. They didn't need to do all that lockdown. The lockdown, I think, is particularly hurtful in countries that don't have good social infrastructure. Countries like the United States and Israel, many, many people have been really, really hurt, especially young people. Everybody panicked. They were fed incorrect numbers by epidemiologists. And this, I think, led to a situation. There's no doubt in my mind that when we come to look back on this, the damage done by lockdown will exceed any saving of lives by a huge factor. Right now, we know that the number of excess deaths in Europe is around 130,000 up till yesterday. This is for all of Europe. This is for a population of around 330 million people. So an excess of 100,000 for this whole year is actually not that much. In some of the worst flu epidemics, we get to those kinds of numbers, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less. Now, I'm not saying flu is like coronavirus. I'm just simply saying that the burden of death of flu is like coronavirus, especially when we correct for the fact that people who die from coronavirus are older on average than people who die from flu. Flu kills young people. It kills two or three times more people under 65 than does coronavirus. If we put those facts into the situation, we find that the burden of death from coronavirus, I'm fairly sure, will in Europe, where we have good numbers, be less than that of a very, very flu. Another factor which has not been considered are all the cancer patients who aren't being treated, or all the heart cardiology patients who aren't being treated. I've heard estimates of tens of thousands of people who are basically going to be dying because of lack of that treatment. And generally, again, the age group who die of cancer are younger than the age group who die of coronavirus. There's one very easy way to sort of summarize coronavirus. I put an article in the Medium in response to an article by the pretty famous British statistician Sir David Spiegelhalter, Cambridge. And he had said that the numbers coming from Ferguson suggested that we had to lose about 1 year of people. It turns out, in fact, that I immediately wrote an article in the same medium in reply to him saying that, in fact, the answer was actually 1 month, not 1 year. So basically, my feeling is, and it's being supported by the numbers, that the amount of excess death you need to reach saturation, I'm not going to call it herd immunity, but where the virus by itself stops, is on the order of 4 weeks of excess death. Now, to give you some idea, in the European area where there is good monitoring by a website called Euromomo, which ran out of Denmark, it covers about 300 million people. Every week in Europe, in that area, there's around 50,000 natural deaths. So 4 weeks will be about 200,000 extra deaths in that year. And it looks like coronavirus in Europe, where there is no doubt that it's the most severely hit area in all the world, will probably reach around 200,000 or 4 weeks worth.
So what happens if what you're saying is there's a sort of there seems to be a statistical observation, which is around 4 weeks of excess death, and then the pandemic seems to peter out or begin to flatten out. What does that mean policy-wise for these European countries then?
So if we could protect the old people perfectly, then the death rates would be very, very low. So, for example, in Europe, I said there were about 140,000 excess deaths in the last, I think, 9 weeks. The number of those excess deaths who are younger than 65 is about 10%. So basically, 13,000 of the 130,000 deaths are actually under 65 years old. So, and if we had simply been able to protect our elderly people, then the death rate would have been much, much less. Remember, the key thing is to have as much infection for as little possible death, and also do whatever you can to keep the hospitals full but not overflowing. It's a difficult calculation. It's one which a country like Sweden can do, where essentially there's no political concerns. The trouble is that in Israel, that I know well, in the United States, everything is political. And therefore, nobody could say something like this. They would say, but you're not valuing death. So the thing that should have been done is for the media to stress to people that every day somebody dies, and these people are essentially in the same age band who die from corona, have other comorbidities, they have other diseases. I've become a huge fan of Twitter. I'd never used Twitter before. And for me, Twitter is the best discussion forum I have seen since I was a student at the Cambridge Laboratory of Molecular Biology, which is a 26 Nobel Prize winner lab, the best lab in the world. The Twitter discussion is phenomenal. And I'm getting documents from Italy showing that many of the COVID deaths were either dead before they were tested, or else they had up to three other conditions. So this is nothing wrong with this. People die for all sorts of reasons. But the news should be stressing this, and maybe they should be counting it as a 0.1 COVID death. Countries seem to be racing to have as many COVID deaths as they could. And this is a huge mistake. In the flu season, no one cares about these people. I mean, the total number of COVID deaths in Europe will be very similar to a severe flu season. This is serious. Flu is a serious disease, but maybe we should just shut down the economy during the flu season. I mean, we need people. People should have been made to understand it. Unfortunately, I think in Britain, they started out wanting to go for herd immunity without too much lockdown. There was then a scary paper, which is likely to be retracted, which influenced Italy as well, where basically it was claimed they were.
Could we just spend a moment on that paper, Professor? Because I know you had some specific queries about Neil Ferguson's paper. We had him
repeat
on the show last week. So what did you think he got wrong in those models and predictions?
So his work was on modeling. In the paper that I saw, and of course these are preprints, so I was following China very carefully. And around the 10th of February, he had his first paper that I saw. And in there, he was getting a case fatality ratio of around 15%, whereas all my observations were saying that it was around 3 or 4%. So So I was suspicious. I looked at the paper very carefully, and in a footnote to a table, it said, assuming exponential growth for 6 days at 15% a day. Now, I had looked at China and never, ever seen exponential growth that wasn't decaying rapidly, so I was suspicious. My numbers were about 10% less, no, one-tenth, not 10% less, 10% of the numbers that Ferguson had obtained. I basically pointed this out in a reply in the Medium, which is in out there. It's clear. Nobody has ever seen it, but it's there, and I didn't hide it. It just didn't get any likes. And this said that it was much more like 1 month than 1 year. And had an exchange both with Spiegelhalter and Ferguson where I tried to show my case, basically saying that all I was doing was just simple proportionality, using exactly the same profile of different ages have different death rates. So there's a profile saying that people over 80 have a certain fraction of the deaths. People between 70 and 80 have a different fraction. Just using that data from almost anywhere, it could be South Korea, it could be Wuhan, it could be anywhere, and just simply saying we want the number of deaths that occurred on the Diamond Princess to be the same number that we found, which was 7 or 8. If you do that and then you apply that proportionality to Britain and the USA, you find that for Britain, the 500,000 drops to about 50,000. And in the United States, the 2 million drops to 200,000, essentially a year dropping to a month. The World Health Organization, and I think epidemiologists in general, can only go wrong if they give a number that's smaller. If I said it's going to be 1 billion deaths from coronavirus, and then say, oh, sorry, you guys have done what I've said, there's only going to be 100,000, that is considered good policy. They overestimated bird flu by a factor of 100 or 10,000. There was a paper in The Guardian. The Guardian wrote about this. Ebola was overestimated by a factor of 100. I think they say their role as scaring the people into doing something. I can understand that, and there's something to be said for it. If you could practice lockdown with zero economic cost and zero social cost, let's do it. But the trouble is that those costs are huge. We're going to have fatalities from hospitals being closed down. We're going to have additional children in trauma. We're going to have businesses damaged, maybe less so in the UK because of the compensation policy, but certainly massive economic damage in the USA and in Israel and in other countries. So you need to balance both of these things. It seems to me that, you know, that's what I don't think is responsible. In my work, if I say a number is too small and I'm wrong, or a number is too big and I'm wrong, both of those errors are the same. If I'm 10% too high or 10% too low, that is okay. It seems that being a factor of 1,000 too high is perfectly okay in epidemiology, but being a factor of 3 too low is too low. So my prediction is the following. Britain, if they had done nothing, would have had reported deaths, not, remember, there's a difference of reported death. My numbers are all reported deaths. We'd have 4 weeks of additional reported death. When the numbers actually came in from what were the real excess deaths, my guess is they would be less than that. So it would not have been double what there was in the month, but maybe 1¾ or so on. So that is my feeling. We're seeing this in Europe. We will know the answer in 3 or 4 weeks' time. We will know for all of Europe exactly what the excess death of coronavirus was. Right now, it's 137,000.
What's your prognosis? What happens next?
There will be a reckoning. Maybe countries will start to see that they need governments that are not necessarily great in rhetoric, but actually thinking and doing things. I often go back and think about what Socrates said 2,400 years ago. Use your common sense instead of listening to the rhetoric of leaders. And we've become very influenced by that. I think also what should happen, and this is going to sound very strange to you, I think this is another foul-up on the part of the baby boomers. I am a real baby boomer. I was born in 1947. I'm almost 73 years old. But I think we've really screwed up. We caused pollution. We allowed the world's population to increase threefold in my lifetime, even more. We've caused the problems of global warming, And now we've left your generation with a real mess in order to save a relatively small number of very old people. If I was a young person now, I would say, now you guys are going to pay for this. This is we have a family WhatsApp, and very early on I said, this is a virus being designed to get rid of the baby boomers. I don't know. I think my wife thinks this is going to be a sea change, and we're going to have, they're going to be young people in the street saying, you guys have really screwed up. It's time to go.